listening to Shop Talk with your host, Kevin Tates. Brought to you by Eastwood Tools. Everything you need to do the job right.
Hey, thanks for listening to Shop Talk, brought to you by the Eastwood Company, helping you do the job right for more than 35 years. I'm Kevin Tates, and today we've got one of those guys online that walks softly and carries a big, well, brush. He's one of the best pinstripers I have ever seen, and has cut his teeth and created a niche the old school way, by doing the work with incredible skill and integrity, creating a reputation that both precedes him and follows him. I don't really know what that means, but listen up as we discuss the finer points of automotive fine art with Rick Harris.
Hey, thanks for listening to Shop Talk. I'm Kevin Tace, and we have got an interesting cat on the phone. Sometimes there's people in your area that you know they're there, you know of them, you know their reputation, and for whatever reason, the stars just have not crossed your path. So, such is the case with this guy. He's considered a local treasure. I'm in the Middle Tennessee area. We're talking about Rick Harris, a custom painter and a custom striper whose reputation precedes him. Rick, how you doing, man?
Kevin, I'm doing good, buddy. How's everything going?
Man, if it was any better, I'd have to be two guys to soak it all up. How about you?
Well, I have been absolutely covered up with work here lately and trying to retire, but they're not going to let me. So as long as I can make money with a little brush, I'm going to stay with it.
I love it. I love that attitude. Well, it seems like there's a lot of people in your corner, and like I said, you've certainly developed a great reputation, and I've known about you for a long time, since my days back in collision repair, but we'll get into that a little bit later. One question for you. I read your resume on your website, which is rickharrispinstriping.com. Quick question. Do you love or do you hate Volkswagen Beetles?
Well, you got to love them. That's how I got my start, and it was not my fault that I ended up with a Volkswagen Beetle, and to be perfectly honest with you, I got out of the Navy in October of 68, and the hot car at the time, obviously, was a 69 V28 Camaro, so being 21 years old and fresh out of the Navy, you know what I wanted to get.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I had a neighbor who worked at Capital Chevrolet, so I go down to the dealership and pick me out a car, and had a white 69Z 302 4-speed with other orange stripes. I was going to be the coolest cat in town.
Mm-hmm.
Big problem. My dad had co-signed for me. Well, so I get my dad down at the dealership, and hell no, he's not going to sign for a hot rod, so the only thing he would co-sign for was a Volkswagen Beetle. And going from a V28 to a Beetle, I don't have to even tell you. This was a big disappointment for me. And I didn't speak to him for a month or two. But bottom line, he co-signed for the Beetle. So I ended up with a Beetle. And I picked the prettiest one on the lot. And it had empty wheels and all kind of cool stuff. Well, I took it home and striped it. Because if I was going to drive a Beetle, I sure wanted it to be the prettiest one in town. And I took it back to the dealership, and believe it or not, that first day, they let me stripe a car for the dealership. And so my dad did me a big favor. Now, he didn't know it at the time, and I didn't either, but he basically got my striping career started by forcing me into driving Volkswagen Beetles, and I was striping them for Superior Motors for $5 a car. I mean, you got to start somewhere, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, for what it's worth, a VW Beetle is one of the best OE cars I've ever driven in the snow. I grew up in the Northwest, and boy, those Beetles would go anywhere that you could point them. And I like the cars. For me, it's a modern throwback of classic styling. It's something that's iconic and hasn't changed in a while. So, yeah, it must have been a disappointment for you, because the 69 Z28, yeah, man, that's a muscle car. But I don't know, it's kind of cool how fate puts you in a certain path and changes directions for you, despite what you think is the right way in the first place. But so hats off to your dad. And by the way, thank you for your service in the Navy. That's I have huge respect for people that have served our country.
Well, thanks. I had, for the most part, it was fun. And I ended up in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba for a year and a half. And that wasn't a whole lot of fun. But I wanted to to get it over with as a kid, you know, I graduated before I was 18, and I didn't want to get drafted, so I joined the Navy and, mm-hmm. and did my time and came back. I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to paint cars for a living.
And right.
They wouldn't hire me not being 18 because I wouldn't be insured working in the shop, so I didn't have a whole lot of choice, but I'm glad I did it, and I have no regrets whatsoever. It was fun, and I enjoyed it. It was a good learning experience and a good time to grow up, you know.
Yeah, my father-in-law was a Navy vet. He was a 22-year vet and retired a master chief and, you know, went all over the world with the Navy and learned, you know, electronic skills. And, of course, in wartime, he was a gunner's mate in World War II and interesting guy. And that experience for him was great in basically forming a foundation in his training and his work ethic, if nothing else. Do you find that your Navy experience kind of whipped you into shape, so to speak, as Jack used to put it, and kind of taught you that you got to put one foot in front of the other and work hard and keep your head down?
Well, it's when you're in boot camp and you're 17 years old, you find out that you're not nearly as smart as you thought you were. And you learn how to take orders and do tasks and finish jobs, and it makes a better person out of you. You're forced into growing up. And, I mean, I was in just a little over 3 years, but I was certainly a better person when I got out than when I went in. I needed it, and I think a lot of kids need it, and it's certainly a good experience far as making you mature a little bit. Everybody needs some of that, you know.
Yep, no doubt. Well, listen, let's go back to painting. You're a pinstriper, obviously, and a very talented one. People listening, if you have the chance, do a quick image search of Rick Harris pinstriping. You'll find some beautiful, beautiful work. But do you consider yourself a custom painter or a striper, or is there no difference? I've seen some of the custom jobs that you've done over the years. Is there a difference between a pinstriper or a custom painter, or is it just all wrapped up into one ball?
Well, everybody has part of it, I think, that they like better or maybe as or better at. But I enjoy all of it. I had to learn body work because to be a painter, you have to, especially a custom painter, you have to paint on top of an absolutely immaculately prepared surface. So I learned how to do body work basically because I couldn't find anybody to do it that would suit me that I could afford. And I pretty much took the car all the way from bare metal to final buff and learned all of it that I could. Pinstriping is just part of the art, but I think anybody that's an artist does a little bit of spraying. And as a kid, I loved candies and pearls and metal flake and flames and scallops and all that stuff and wanted to learn all of it. So I started building model cars when I was 11, which is a real good basic foundation for learning custom paint. And, of course, we were using, you know, rattle cans in the beginning and finally progressed to airbrushes. And I was mixing my own colors and just learned a lot working with models because it teaches you patience and it teaches you some skills that you probably wouldn't normally use. But after I got out, I wanted to do street rides and show cars and all that kind of stuff. And we built a 72 Volkswagen Super Beetle into a show car and took it to the Street Machine Nationals and won Best Paint with a Volkswagen.
Oh, and congratulations, man.
I about had to fight my way out of that show because the guys with the Corvettes and the Camaros and stuff were not real happy getting beat by a Volkswagen Beetle. But
here comes that bug again.
It was fun. I mean, you know, I couldn't afford anything, you know, much more expensive than a Beetle, but I took a brand new car and cut it up and made a show car out of it, welded the quarter panel windows up in it and metal flaked it and put candies on it and a crushed velvet interior in it. And we just had a ball and didn't spend a whole lot of money, but just had a really big time and made a lot of magazines and it was good at the time. My wife and I actually spent our dates working on that car. And
very cool.
So she cried like a baby when I sold it. I mean, it was like giving one of her kids away or something. It was awful. But I enjoyed doing that, and I've still got pictures of the car and stuff, and I saved the trophy. And it meant a lot to me at the time to win Best Painted Street Machine Nationals, obviously. So,
yeah, for sure. Well, and to have one of your vehicles that you've constructed, that you've conceived, featured in magazines, I just recently had that honor and that thrill, and it's a neat thing, and you've had countless, I'm sure. But that's something that you mark off the bucket list, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Making your first cover, you buy about 8 copies of the magazine, so you can, you know, you buy them out so you can give your buddies a copy of it. But yeah, that's a really big deal. And no, it doesn't pay any money and all of that. They don't send you a big check in the mail for being on the cover, but it means a lot more than what the money would mean, you know. I thoroughly enjoyed getting stuff covered in shows. And when one of my customers wins a trophy, I mean, I win it too. You know, it's the same deal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. It's I don't even know what I'm trying to say. But it's a huge honor, and it's something that you never forget. Well, I want to ask you about influences. Who influenced you as far as a striping style? Everybody always draws off of Von Dutch, but he's not the only one. He's probably one of the best known stripers for that art form. But who influenced you, if not Von Dutch?
Well, in 73, after winning Best Paint the Street Machine Nationals, a buddy and I drove that car to Tulsa, Oklahoma to the Street Rod Nationals. And we were so ill prepared, we didn't have a room or anything. I carried a little thermos pop tent, and we set the tent up at the end of the parking lot where all my buddies were staying, and we found a little grassy spot and set the tent up, and we stayed in the tent, and we grabbed the keys from the first guy that walked out of the building that we knew that had a room, and we'd go take a shower in their room and go to the Nationals. And in the process of walking around seeing everything, which the Nationals back then was just an amazing experience for anybody that had never gone. You know, this was a big deal. And there was a guy from California striping named Shaky J. And I had heard of him and seen his car in the magazines. And he was a striper, and he had his Volkswagen show car with him. And I had mine with me, and both of us had striping brushes underneath the front hood. So it was like a real weird deal going, you know. But I really paid attention to what the man was doing because he was already an experienced striper, and at that point I'd only been doing it for like 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, he took me under his wing, and that weekend, in 2 days, I learned more about striping than I had learned in 4 years of doing it on my own. He literally turned me around right in my path and just taught me all kind of little subtle tricks and things to make my work better, and the right kind of brush. And
Wow. Isn't that something, how somebody can inspire you and the light bulbs just start going off? Isn't that a wonderful experience to have?
I was just in the right place at the right time, and the man that taught Shaky Jake how to stripe was Von Dutch. So I feel like I've kind of gotten the apples about as close to the tree as I could get, you know?
Yeah, no kidding, man.
And I started going to California, and I spent a week, when I became self-employed in 1980, I would spend a week at a time going to California and working with Shaky Jake, and I just can't tell you what that experience was worth to me. Unbelievable. We'd go to dealerships and shops, and we went all over Orange County and striped all over the place, and just had a lot of fun. And I made him some money. I didn't go out there for the money. I went out there just for the experience. And I learned more new tricks hanging around with that guy. And it's just unbelievable what he taught me. And he got cancer and died on me in 87. But I never forget the time we had together and what I learned from hanging around the guy. He was a good person, but he wasn't afraid to teach me all the stuff that would make my work better. And
well, on top of that, Rick, let me interrupt you here. He wasn't afraid to show you, and he was fearless in that, because a lot of people are very closed with their art, and they, for whatever reason, don't want to share it. But that goes twofold, my friend. You were open enough to shut your mouth and listen. And that's a huge part of it, too. You have to be receptive to what somebody's telling you. It's very, very important. So hats off to you for being humble enough. You're making your living in that trade. But to listen to somebody like that, to know that you had to step back from what you knew how to do and sponge up that knowledge and sponge up that information and do it humbly. That's a skill that, I don't know, let's go back to the Navy. Maybe that's a skill that you learned in maybe some of your more formative years. What do you think about that?
Well, my dad, one of his things was, if you're going to get better at something, hang out with people that are better than you are. And
yeah.
I definitely got my skills improved dramatically hanging around with Chucky Jake. And because he was so good at the time, he was one of the leading Southern California pinstripers. So, he taught me color combinations and proper line placement on cars and what a good design looked like and why a mirror design had to blow towards the rear of the car and just all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's things that most people don't even think about, but he had learned all that from Dutch, and Dutch was very technical about what was correct and what wasn't and why designs have to balance and all that kind of stuff. And it was a learning experience that I'll never forget. I took pictures on every trip I took, and 20 years later, we put him on the cover of Auto Art magazine, and I don't have to tell you how good that felt to me. It was kind of me paying him back a little bit for all that he had.
Yeah.
You know, I
very
mean,
nice.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a good feeling and got a lot of good response off of it. And we featured him in the magazine and put him on the cover 20 years after he was gone. But he influenced a lot of people and taught a whole bunch of guys how to strive. So it was a good thing.
Very cool. Very cool. One of the things I remember seeing, I went to a car show. It was an outdoor car show. This is probably maybe 10, maybe 12 years ago. No, it's more than 10 years ago, I know. Anyway, regardless, doesn't matter. It was a while ago at an outdoor car show here in Tennessee, and there was a row of street rods, and I kept looking at the striping work, and I kept looking, and looking at the color combinations, and what made me ask this question of you is the guy that owned the car, it was like a 38 Buick sedan or something like that, a beautiful old street rod, and the color combination that you used was something that I would never conceive of. I tend to look at the color wheel as families of colors that work together, but you, my friend, you went, it's like you went across the color wheel with a compass and said, well, this is so far opposite of that it has to work. And I don't know what your thought process was, and maybe that goes back to your influences, but it was, in my mind, it was a bizarre color combination to go on the top coat color of this car, but it worked perfectly. And the owner of the car said, yeah, that's Rick Harris. That's a Rick Harris job. That's kind of one of the things he's known for is his color choice. So that, I think, I don't know, man. Shaky Jake, through Von Dutch, 6 degrees of separation, however we want to put it. How important is it for you to analyze color and to look at the color, or do you just go intuitively?
Well, I try to kind of find out what the customer's got in mind, and sometimes their paint that's in their bathroom really won't work on their street rods, you know, but I try to give them some input on what it's going to look like, but I generally let the car tell me what it needs. If it's a real subtle car, it's going to get a real subtle color combination. If it's a real wild, supercharged, tubbed out bad boy, then you can go a little crazier with the design and the colors and make it all go together. But you can't take a brand new Cadillac and put a Von Dutch design on the hood because it ain't going to work. It's too much striping for the personality of the car, I guess is one way to put it. So you have to keep it suit and tie for the guys that are driving these cars, so they're all suit and tie guys, you know. And
yeah.
I'll take a black Cadillac with a gray leather interior, and I'll put two grays on it. Well, that's as subtle as you can get, but it works on that car.
Right.
So you kind of have to analyze the car and the owner, and, you know, you get some real crazy owner, you can get by with putting wild colors on the car because you know they're going to like it no matter what. But I try to make them all different, but I don't get them bizarre enough that everybody goes, ooh, that's crazy. You know, I don't want to be known as a crazy striper, but a lot of Shaky Jack influence in there, and he was sort of subtle a lot of the times, but sometimes subtle really works, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you kind of have to. I just try to read the owner and the vehicle and determine what would work for them, and I want them to be happy with it next week, you know, because what I like and what they like may not be the same thing.
I like what you said. The vehicle tells you what to do, just like a panel tells you whether it's straight or not. And by the way, for listeners, we're talking with Rick Harris, awesome pinstriper here in Tennessee, but he does travel. On rickharrispinstriping.com, you can get in touch with his contact page, see some of his work. And Rick, I want to switch gears from cars now to guitars. I used to be a starving musician, so beautiful instruments that you've been working on for the Gibson Custom Shop, they are near and dear to me. Talk to me about the Billy Gibson aged or the relic Les Paul that you've been working on.
That's crazy.
I'm sorry, Billy Gibbons. I said Billy Gibson. I mean, anyway, Billy Gibbons.
This whole deal started about a year ago, and they had to get with Billy and get a contract written up. And bottom line, he had a guitar that somebody had striked for him that they wanted to duplicate. And so he brought this guitar in, and they actually duplicated the guitar so exact, they scanned the neck and did a program on it and cut the necks for the cars, the guitars that we've been building exactly in every dimension as the neck on his original guitar. And so it'll play the same and feel the same and all that. And the original deal was for 300 gold top Les Pauls, and these are all outfitted with electronics from the 50s. They've got a different trim. The binding is the same color it was back then. A lot of details on the guitar that make it look old, although it's brand new. And the first 150 were striped and cleared and buffed, and they call those VOS. And Vintage Original Spec is what it stands for. And so we did, the first 150 were real pretty, and they're like $5,600. So the next 150 are all aged, and they crack the clear with a blade. They score it with a razor blade and make the clear crack. They take some of the paint off and not dance in it. It's crazy to see them take a brand new guitar and beat it to death with a railroad spike. But I'm serious. I strike them in one shot so they can buff part of it off. When they get through, part of my striping's gone. I mean, it's gone. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, but they get a lot more money for these. But they're very popular. A lot of people like a guitar that looks like it's 30 years old. Of course, it plays like a brand new one because it's got brand new pickups and all that on it. But the last 50 of them, Billy's going to autograph. And I don't even want to know what those are going to sell for because they're going to be extremely expensive. But he's going to come in and actually find 50 of them. And it's been a fun deal. Oh, yeah.
Billy's a living legend and something that he touches. You know, I mean, just like that guitar, it's a throwback to the art form that he has perfected with his own personal style. And I'm a huge, huge ZZ Top and a Billy Gibbons fan, and got the chance to meet him here last year. And I don't know, man, it's neat to see stuff like that. You know, when they pay attention to the detail, they're not just taking an off-the-shelf guitar, sanding the corners off of it and slapping a sticker on it. Like you said, they scan the neck and it's an exact copy. And, you know, the old, I was reading online and the pickups and the old windings, they go as far as to either source original stuff, just like a restoration, or to find the manufacturers of the wiring and the windings and get the same gauge and the same diameter. So it's an accurate and faithful replication of an original axe, man. And I think it's cool. So it must feel great for you to be a part of some of that for forever.
Big honor. A big honor. We made a pattern of his original design, and all of the guitars have the same design on them, and it's a very close duplicate to what his original guitars got on it. And been a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I tell you, to me, it's an honor to get to strike something that you know people are going to collect and keep forever, because these are, some of them will be played, obviously, but a lot of them are going to be hanging, they're going to be art pieces hanging on the wall forever, and that's a good feeling for me.
Yep, absolutely. Well, listen, you're in deep with the Gibson Custom Shop. I took the tour a couple of years ago. Have you got any pull? Can you get me one of those guitars? Can you get me a discount on one?
Believe it or not, the VOS, when I asked, I said, okay, they're $5,600. How much is my cost on one? And my cost is $4,500 on it, so we're going to have to, Kevin, we're going to have to save up before we can buy one.
Okay, I'll start working right now.
Boy, they're pretty, though. Have you seen one in person?
Pardon me?
Have you seen one of them in person? They are amazing. They're really, really pretty. You need to, if you get a chance, stop by your favorite guitar shop and check one of them out, because it's a nice piece of work. It really is. These guys, Custom Shop does beautiful work. They really do.
They sure do, and they take it real seriously. What surprised me, and we're diverting from custom painting for sure, but what surprised me about the tour of the Custom Shop, or just the Gibson factory in general here in Nashville, is that it's not a bunch of machines stamping out stuff. It's a bunch of guys. It's a bunch of people that are talented. The ladies that scrape the bindings and the guy that, you know, he's got guitars hanging on a conveyor. And it's all hand craftsmanship. And I don't use that word lightly. It's craftsmanship. And the buffing, there's a guy next to a buffing wheel as big as, you know, my brother. And he's holding the guitar body, getting the perfect gloss on that thing. It's really, really was eye-opening, and it really endeared me to the Gibson brand. So to me, for what you and I do, Rick, as far as our hands-on experience with cars, those guys are no different. They're true craftsmen, and they're true artists in creating something that they love. So I don't know. I think maybe that's one of the connections between music and rock and cars, I think, is the respect for the craftsmanship.
Well, they definitely take pride in their work, and I think it shows in the end product. You know, you're right. All of them are craftsmen, and they're proud of their stuff. They're very particular about it, and I'm particular about my work too. So I kind of fit in there, no problem. But
yep, absolutely.
I've been doing this since the first of the year, and been a great experience. I'm looking forward to doing some more with them.
Excellent. Excellent, man. Well, listen, I want to ask you about a car that I saw. It was a long time ago. I became friends with Joe Elmore and Stacey David, and I know Chuck Hansen as well, but not as well as Joe. I worked with Joe for the last 8 years at RTM Productions, hosting one of their shows. But I remember going into the Horsepower Studios when they were still up in Madison and seeing this little deuce on I think it was a buddy lift, but it was a car lift. A beautiful paint job. It was a purple candy, it looked like, with a flame job on it. Now, tell me a little bit about that car. What got you into that situation? Did they contact you to paint that car? Did they buy it from somebody that you had done it for previously? Give us a little bit of history. I know people listening to me that have watched those shows will recognize what I'm talking about, that car. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, prior to that car being built there, I had done some pinstriping and stuff for them. And it's a different deal when they stick that camera in your face. It takes a little getting used to, especially when you're holding a striping brush. And Elmore likes to talk to you in the middle of a stripe and everything else. But, you know, he made me stop in the middle of a stripe and answer a question and then pick the stripe back up. And I was proud that I did it in one take. But
nice.
I had done some striping for them, and they got the deal to build the Horsepower coupe and just basically asked me if I would be interested in painting it, which, of course, I was. And PPG sponsored the paint for the Purple Pearl, and they developed it here in Nashville, and it was a beautiful purple pearl. It had so much pearl in it, it was ridiculous. But the flame colors were all donated by House of Color, so I got to do the whole works from start to finish in front of the camera, and we prepped it and shot it and flamed it, striped it, and everything. And the horsepower coupe was a real popular deal on that show because their ratings went through the roof every time we did something in relation to paint or on that car. But
yeah,
it was an awful lot of fun working with Joe and all of them, and I'd like to do some more stuff with them. It was a great experience, and you learn how to speak in front of the camera, and you learn how to work around the camera. It's a different experience altogether from what you're normally doing. But that was a great big project to be involved with. I thoroughly enjoyed it. That car got a lot of ink and was very, very well known in this area. You know, it's on the sign at Tennessee Speech Board. The car that's on their sign is
that
car.
Do you know if that car's still around?
It got sold, and I'm not sure where it ended up. It went out of state. It was local for a while, and then they ran it through Barrett Jackson and sold it, and it ended up somewhere else. And I'm not sure where the car ended up, but I was sad to see it leave the area because I enjoyed going to the shows and telling everybody, hey, check it out. That's the one we get on TV, you know.
Yeah.
It's bragging rights.
Was it a glass body or a steel body?
It was a glass body, and everything was brand new. Richard Jones built the car, and of course Chuck and all of them got a lot of donated parts and what have you. But when I told them I wanted to put apple green stripes on their purple car, they all looked at me like, "Really? Are you serious, man?" And I put a little. We did the dash, and I put a little apple green on it, and they were like, "Yeah, that works." But they didn't have a clue, you know. But I knew what the car needed, and that was just a great little project to be involved with. And I still got pictures of the whole deal all the way through from when we started. It was great, a lot of fun.
I had the opportunity to do a paint job and a flame job, of course, with some friends on the TV show on the truck show. We did a downs-bodied 34 Ford pickup, and the fiberglass presents its own set of challenges, but that's a whole other conversation. But the color combination we did red fenders and a black and red two-tone body, and the way that hood came up is it was a forward-lifting hood with a weird reverse mechanism on the hinge, but we had the flames coming out of the hood sides and into the doors, and the dividing line between the upper and lower two-tone right along the belt line of that truck, we used apple green, and it was out of a different palette of colors. It was out of the what was used to be called hot hues out of the DuPont line, but it was literally called apple green. And when we talked about the color scheme, it was myself, Tommy Boschers, and a fellow named Brian Botkers, who was a staff painter at Downs at the time. Great, great custom painter. And Tommy's a Renaissance guy. He's a local guy here, and wise beyond his years. A very skilled custom car builder as well. And we said, yeah, green dividing line. Anybody else that we talked to about that, they just thought that was the craziest thing. We ordered the color, and they, you know, but it's what the car needed. It was the perfect dividing line for it, and it was. I have to say that guys like you forced my mind open to think about alternatives like that, rather than something in the red family or that's a blend between red and black. So I just want to say out loud, thank you for you know, whether you knew it or not. Just by your examples, you've had a hand, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. You've had a hand in opening people's minds to what works and what doesn't, and those are perfect examples of that. So we appreciate you, man.
Thank you. And you know, the first rule in custom painting is there are no rules.
So I like it.
You pick what you like, and I mean, in striping, if you throw a color down and you go, "Ooh, that ain't it," you can always wash it off and do something different, you know. It's not permanent until that coat of clear goes on. But I have I experimented on these little panels. If I need to try a new color combination, I do a little stripe panel. And the panels are kind of, that's what everybody is doing now. They're doing these little panels and they're doing charity auctions and selling them. And Shaky Jake and I had that talk in the early 80s. He said, what happens to our work when we're gone? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, all these cars that we do, what happens to them? I said, well, they get crushed and repainted and, you know, they're gone. I mean, 10 years after a striper is dead and gone, his work is too. So what we decided was if we did some panels and framed them and hung them on the wall, it became permanent art at that time. And so I carried a couple of panels out there and had him stripe one of them. And I striped one and gave it to him. And I don't know where it ended up, but I still have his striped panel. And he signed it, Shaky Jake is still alive. And it is the only panel the man ever did.
Oh, wow. And
so it's worth a lot to me, but I've had people try to buy it too. And they've offered some stupid money for it, but it's just not for sale because to me that is like the ultimate souvenir to have. But everybody started doing these panels and putting them on the wall, and we've made art out of pinstriping where when it's on the hood of a car that people don't really consider it art, it's just striping, but you cut that chunk of hood out and hang it on the wall, all of a sudden it becomes art. So I don't know how to explain it, but I'm glad that it has evolved to that point. But that's basically how everybody experiments with new ideas. They do a little panel, and if it looks cool.
Yeah, little test panels.
Yeah, you put it on your buddy's car if it looks cool on the panel, you know.
Yep, exactly. Well, let's switch gears again, Rick. For somebody that wants to learn pinstriping, there's lots of videos. There's stuff on YouTube. There's tutorials. There's lots of guys that have done stuff. And you and I have talked about maybe doing some videos, and I would like to talk about that down the road and do some stuff, whether it's on the internet or whatever we do. What would you say to somebody that was trying to get into it, that wanted to learn some skills? Where would you point them as far as instructors or videos or inspiration even?
Well, there's several videos available. There's some DVDs that are fairly instructive. They show you the basics, but the best thing for a person to do that wants to learn to stripe is go to one of these panel jams at a car show or an individual shop and learn how to stripe from experienced guys that are there working. Bob Bond has a stripers reunion every year in Lee's Summit, Missouri, for 3 days. He feeds everybody for 3 days for $70, if you can believe that. But last year, over 40 stripers showed up, and they work in one shop for 3 days. And we've got guys that do gold leaf. We've got guys that do lettering. It's just a wealth of experience and new ideas and sharing. And several years ago, a little kid walked in to Bob's with a little striping kit in his hand, and he was 8 years old and wanted to learn how to stripe.
Wow.
So we said, you're in the right place, son. What's your name? He said, my name's Bobby Sanchez. And one of them said, well, you're Mexican, aren't you, boy? And he said, yes, sir, I am. He said, you're going to be Von Mex. To this day, he's still Von Mex.
Nice.
He is about 20... He's about 21 or 2 now, and one of the best stripers, I mean, in that part of the country. He has really, he comes every year and just gets better and better and better. And he wanted to learn to stripe, so he came to our little get-together, and that's probably the best thing he could have done. You've got to get around people that are doing the work to watch them and learn from them. And one of these, they just had one at Louisville at the car show. They had a panel jam at the car show, and there was 50 maybe showed up from all over the country. I mean, they came from Los Angeles and everything to this deal. And I carried a guitar up there and striped it, and it brought $1,000 at the auction. But all the money went to kids' charities and St. Jude and stuff like that. And it's really a lot of fun, but you learn something. I mean, I've been doing this 45 years, and I still learn new stuff every time I get around these guys that are so good, you know.
Yep. Excellent stuff. Well, Rick, what's going on? What's next for Rick Harris? Rick Harris Pinstriping. I noticed you got merchandise on your website. Are you as passionate about it now? Are you kind of stepping back and letting the world happen a little bit? What's up in your future?
Well, there's so many stripers that are dying off on us that several years ago I decided to start teaching classes in striping. And this year I'm doing 4 classes altogether. I want to pass it on because this is an art form that needs to keep going, you know. And we need to get kids involved and get them off the video games and get a brush in their hand and teach them a little skills and a little craft and get them fired up. And I've been teaching classes now for several years, and it's a one-day class, and I just want to pass it on because there for a while, if you were on the cover of Auto Art magazine, you were deceased. And it was... I'm serious. All of there's just a lot of good stripers that had left and took all their skills with them, you know. And it's sad to me that they didn't pass it on because some of these people were extremely talented. I mean, did stuff that people still can't figure out how they did it, you know.
I'm
still going to stripe, and to answer your question, yes, I'm still as passionate about it as I ever was. It doesn't, if it's something you truly love, it doesn't get old, and I think the ability to do this is a gift, and a lot of people use their gifts and some don't, but I've always thought this is what I was put here to do, and I've tried to get real good at it and keep it going and keep it interesting, and there's nothing more fun than taking a street ride and putting a nice striping job on it because you're going to see it at the... You're going to see it at the car shows and at the cruise ends. And, hey, man, did you stripe? Yeah, I sure did, man. What do you think?
Uh-huh.
It's still a lot of fun. You got to be proud of your work. You got to sign your work. Shaky Jake said you have to be able to cover your name with a dime. So if your name is Krizanowski or something, I guess you'd have to shorten it up. But I've always, I go around looking for signatures, you know, because if you're proud of your work, you got to sign it. If you don't sign it, somebody's going to claim they did it. And so I still sign my work and always have. But no, I still enjoy doing it as much as I ever did. It's still a lot of fun. It's creative. It gives you a chance to show off, if it will. And you learn new tricks all the time. I'm still learning. There's new brushes that are coming out. That weren't available before that make it a little easier. They have a 7-0 striping brush available now, which is amazing for little bitty tiny stuff.
Right.
And a few years ago, the smallest striping brush you could get was a 3-0, you know, and now they're getting them smaller and they're fine tuning them and making them work better. And it's a never ending deal. It's always something new. Every time I go to one of these shows, I see something different that I hadn't thought of before.
Very cool. It's
still fun. I still enjoy it, and I want to die with striking brush in my hand somewhere having fun.
Well, you know that Shop Talk is sponsored by the Eastwood Company. I'm a huge fan of the Eastwood Company and proud to be working with them on a couple of different things. One of them is utilizing technology. I mean, you and I talked before about being dragged kicking and screaming into this world of high tech, and me being in television and in the music industry before that. I'm familiar with the curve and this unbelievable amount of technology that's at our fingertips right now, which is a good thing. It can be intimidating, but it's a good thing. Where I'm going with this is one of the things that I'm doing with the Eastwood Company is we're doing live workshops with an internet connection. My shop down here in Tennessee, which is not very far from you. I'm in Columbia, Tennessee. We broadcast through the Pennsylvania hub all over the world, and we do it live, and we can have interaction. We can have people ask us questions while we're doing a seminar. And, you know, we keep into about 30, 45 minutes, something like that. And it's a blast to do. I'm in the room with myself and a videographer, and you know, 1,000 or 5,000 people watching online as we go. And then the downloads after that are insane. I love this technology. And that's one of the things I'm most excited about working with the Eastwood Company is learning this and that kind of stuff. So I know I'm getting long-winded with this, but I want to propose something to you, Rick. I would love to have you down to the shop here to do a live workshop, since you are an instructor and you're arguably a living legend, at least in this area, and a master of what you do. Would you accept my invitation to do a live workshop?
Absolutely. No problem. Just let me know when. I'll bring a brush and we'll paint something.
Man, that sounds great. I'm so excited about it. We're talking with Rick Harris, so rickharrispinstriping.com. Please go online, look at his work, or go to a car show. You'll probably see some of his work. But I want to thank you, Rick, for taking the time out today to talk with us and share your experiences and your passion for doing what you do. I've got the utmost respect for you, my friend, and even though we probably passed each other in the aisles of a SEMA show or a car show, I look forward to the day that I can shake your hand and we can start doing some real nice work together.
Kevin, I appreciate you having me on, and I certainly will come down and we'll do some stuff together. Looking forward to doing a pinstriping video with you, too. I think that would be a lot of fun and also very informative for people that are wanting to learn how to stripe.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I'm right there with you on knowing how important it is to make these skills available for somebody to draw from. And on that note, let's make it happen, dude.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
All right, we're listening to Rick Harris, rickharrispinstriping.com. Check it out. I'm your host, Kevin Tates. You've been listening to Shop Talk, brought to you by the Eastwood Company. Do the job right with Eastwood. Rick's a good guy and quite talented. Hopefully our paths will cross again and we'll be able to show you his talents next time around and not just talk about it. In the meantime, thanks for listening and thanks for emailing questions into us here. As you know, big prizes are given away if we ask your question on the show. So for now, I'm Kevin Tates. This is Shop Talk and we are proud to be sponsored by Eastwood. So get out there and do the job right.